Marshall here. Welcome back to The Realignment. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Hope you enjoyed the Q&A we posted yesterday. If you have not gotten access to that Q&A, the full version of it, it's because you were not a subscriber to The Realignment. If you subscribe, you could submit questions, get other content, and of course, support the show. So if you want to get the full access to that, you can go to realignment.supercast.com. Once again, that's realignment.supercast.com. Or you can check the link in the show notes whenever you click this on your podcast player or on YouTube. Today's episode is really straightforward. I've been long interested in the story of TikTok and how the US should approach technology questions when it comes to national security. One of our guests this year from Lincoln Network, our sponsor, Jeff Kane, appeared on the podcast towards the start of the year, and he actually testified before Congress about social media and national security. So I thought it'd be a great idea to bring Jeff back on the show, discuss this complicated issue. So hope you enjoy this conversation, have attached his testimony and all the other information you need to make this a valuable conversation. Would definitely love to hear what folks think about this debate. Hope you enjoy the episode. Jeff Kane, welcome back to The Realignment.
Marshall, thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to chat with you again. You recently testified about social media, privacy, national security. Can you just start by summarizing what your overall worldview is, what you testified before Congress on?
Yes. So my background is as an investigative journalist focusing on China. I had did much work in China investigating human rights abuses, technology, surveillance, military and national security capabilities. And so, now I've been in Washington, D.C. I've been back here for almost 2 years now after living in East Asia. And I was called to testify in front of the Senate, the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, on the problem of TikTok, the threats that TikTok is imposing on American democracy, on our, the privacy rights of our citizens and potentially our children, ensuring that TikTok is not under the sway of, most importantly, the Chinese Communist Party. This was one of the major subjects. It's a subject that's been in and out of the news for a few years now, but it's starting to pick up some momentum in these Washington, D.C. circles. So I spoke about my own background. I've dealt with TikTok before. I've dealt with their representatives. I've investigated TikTok, and it's related company ByteDance in China. I went out with the whole shebang. I had my guns ready, had my testimony ready, and I did my best to expose as much of the truth as is now publicly known.
Yeah, and we'll, of course, include the link to your testimony in the episode show notes. Let's just start with some basic questions, though, that tend to get mixed into this debate. TikTok aside, to what degree are you concerned about privacy when it comes to tech companies and social media platforms?
I'm extremely concerned. I don't think that the U.S. has a very strong privacy regime in place. But, there's a significant difference between, sitting here talking about Facebook and how it gathers data under a modern republic that has a system of laws and courts that, we can use to challenge privacy data practices. That is different from a discussion about TikTok, which is a company that is connected to a sister company in China called ByteDance that has been shown to be directly responsible, accountable to the dictates of the Chinese government, which is one of the most sophisticated surveillance state, I would say actually the most sophisticated surveillance state ever in human history. It really is a travesty, just the amount of influence that the Chinese government does have over ByteDance and then by extension, TikTok. So these are two separate discussions. It's very difficult to, blend them together. There are lots of pundits out there who are saying, why are we focused on TikTok when this is just a general privacy issue? We can talk about all social media platforms and how they gather data, but TikTok deserves a category of its own because of the China connection.
Yeah, it's interesting. You had a good tweet that I'd love for you to unpack for folks. You pointed out that a lot of folks who are discussing the TikTok issue and China issue, well, actually, frankly, to your point, tend not to actually have a background in China policy. So Once again, folks can dunk on Taylor Lorenz for a variety of reasons. I think she's actually a strong like tech reporter on her actual beat. But when she tweets about this issue, she tends not to talk about, oh, the nature of the CCP, the way that a second Cold War star relationship would cause us to have a different conversation they would in the past. Really explain the dynamic that you're getting at there when you're discussing it.
That, yeah, I think that you just summed it up really well. Taylor Lorenz, who is the star reporter at the Washington Post in tech, does plenty of stories and reporting on TikTok, its implications for society, its privacy implications and so forth. She has done a lot of strong reporting on the general topic of TikTok and social media and privacy. But when a reporter such as her veers and ventures into the territory of Chinese authoritarianism and the way that Chinese society and politics are structured, in these very totalitarian ways, she misfires. And it's not just her. A lot of these kind of Washington, D.C. pundits, they're not exposed to China very often. A lot of them have never even been to China. They've never studied the language. They've never really gone deep into that topic. And so they miss the target when they start trying to connect this to general privacy issues in America. Here's the issue. So even if TikTok and its executives, as they testified last week in our hearing, even if they go on and they can prove like, okay, well, technically, legally, TikTok is a separate company from ByteDance in China. They're two companies. This is the argument that they give. These are two companies that are separate and do not report to each other, but both report instead to a Cayman Islands. It's essentially a shell company. It's just this Cayman Islands vehicle that they've developed to give the impression that these two companies are separate. Okay, so let's assume good faith. They are telling the truth. They have the evidence to back it up. That doesn't matter because TikTok has employees in China. This is something that they've admitted. ByteDance, which is run by a Chinese national, which was founded in China, is seen by the Chinese Communist Party as a Chinese company and therefore is required under its authoritarian system to comply with the demands of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, even American companies operating in China will have these kinds of authoritarian constraints put on them. But the way the Chinese Communist Party sees it is that they will single out ByteDance and TikTok for special political pressure simply because the ownership is from China. It's fundamentally a Chinese company, no matter how TikTok tries to argue it. I mean, come on, Cayman Islands shell company, that's not going to separate. That's not going to protect them from the Chinese Communist Party. The thing you have to understand about the Chinese Communist Party is that it is vicious. This is a ruthless entity that exploits every loophole it can, that looks for ways to threaten and cajole and force people into following its orders. It has kidnapped Chinese technology executives in the past. Jack Ma, the chairman of Alibaba, is a good example. Alibaba is the Chinese Amazon equivalent. He had disappeared for a while because the Chinese Communist Party was unhappy with what he was doing. If you are a nominally a private company operating in China, there is no clear dividing line between the private company and the public government demand. So this is enshrined and encoded in Chinese law. There are vast numbers of laws that give the Chinese Communist Party absolute totalitarian authority to require companies and Chinese citizens to comply with, for example, requests to partake in intelligence operations. So just to give one example, under China's national security law and under its national intelligence law, let's say you're a Chinese employee of TikTok, the American TikTok company, but you're operating in China, which is the case. Under Chinese law, if those employees received a notice from the Chinese Ministry of Public Security or the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which are two very powerful policing and intelligence bodies, and those orders, those paper orders, say we're running a top secret operation. You could not talk to anybody about this, but we want you to look for ways to gather the data of Americans and look particularly at these people. It could be Major General Smith, it could be someone in the White House who uses TikTok. Like, look for data on these guys, see what you can do. We know that you have access to the systems because you are an employee of TikTok and you're operating in China. So you can find a way to do it, and you have to report back to us on that data. If this were to happen, and it could have happened already, we don't know because it will be secret, those Chinese employees will be required to comply in secret with the Chinese Communist Party, or else they could face detention and possibly even prison. So this whole argument that people are making, TikTok is separate, TikTok is American, it's not the Chinese company, it's a different company. We have different privacy issues in America. We should not single out TikTok for some kind of special treatment simply because it's from China. It's a bogus argument, and it completely misses the point on how the Chinese regime works.
I want to ask a question that folks tend to push back on, and I think in good faith. They would say, Jeff, what you're describing is essentially the U.S. behaving more like China, not like itself, like not like a free market, not like those different bits. Like, how would you respond to that argument?
So when people make that argument, they're pointing usually to the FISA court, so the Foreign Intelligence Court, which is a secret court that requires that intelligence agencies such as the NSA and the CIA will often go through it to try to gather data on foreign national security threats and also local threats. So like if the FBI were to request the data of people using AT&T, maybe there's a particular person they're interested in, they'll often go through something similar to the FISA court, kind of get a a special tribunal set up or a grand jury to decide whether or not to require that data to be handed over. So yes, there is the controversy in America of of various court systems and various judiciary bodies being used as a cover for the American government to attempt to intrude on the personal privacy of Americans. Okay, so yes, concede that point. That's something we should all worry about. It's something we should care about if we care about privacy and free markets. But this is still a fundamentally different problem than what exists in China, because here in America, we still do have separation of powers. We do have lawyers. We have people who can push back. There's an entire system in place of different bodies and different institutions whose job is to ensure that the U.S. government does not significantly overstep its authority. Think about it this way. So in America, we have separation of powers. We have, the three branches of government. No single branch is supposed to overstep the other too much. Although in practice, the executive branch is often the one that does overstep, it is true. China does not fundamentally have that system. The system in China is not rule of law, separation of powers. The system in China is rule by the party. So the legal system is under the party. The way that laws are written, laws must submit to the party. It's not rule by law, rule by the party. So if the party decides to interpret a law differently, it's not hard for the party to accomplish that. They can, they can mess with laws there and put anybody in prison for essentially anything they want. These are, and there have been a lot of good studies done that compare the U.S. and Chinese legal systems. But to compare, the American system and to say that this is simply America being more like China as a result of the war on terror and the intelligence gathering capabilities of the NSA, it's off the mark because it's fundamentally a different system with a different set of powers, a different way of appealing, a different systems of pushing back and ensuring that the government does not overstep.
Yeah, great answer. But let me rephrase a tiny bit to what I was kind of trying to hint at more, which is some folks would say the broad topic here we're discussing, a possible ban on TikTok, they would say that that feels un-American and that feels much more like the Chinese system, in that the Chinese system prohibits American companies, especially in the social media scale, Google search, Facebook, et cetera, from actually entering into the Chinese market. So they would say, Jeff, I get all the threats you're describing, but what you are proposing here, or what folks who would align with what, say, the case you're making would propose, is fundamentally un-American, and I would not want to be much more like an authoritarian state. So help us sort of adjudicate like that bit there.
Yes. No, I agree completely. There's a lot that the American government can do to, for example, ban TikTok, as you said. But I do agree that we should not become like China in the fight against China. We have to retain our American values, which are liberal, tolerant, open, liberal democracy. When I say liberal, I mean liberal in the bigger sense. We need to ensure that we're fighting China, but we're not doing so in a way that absolutely concedes our civil liberties, our free market, our ability as individuals to stand up and to say that this is America. We are not an authoritarian regime. There's a lot I could get into here. There are many different facets of this argument, but I think the key point here to understand is that nobody is talking anymore, at least nobody within the government is talking about outright banning TikTok. The end goal, the most extreme goal that I have heard proposed within the government, within government circles, is that TikTok will be required to sell its American app to probably Oracle, or maybe perhaps there was talk of Microsoft in the past, but there has been a CFIUS review underway. So
What's
the
CFIUS?
committee, CFIUS is the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which is a committee that exists. It's underneath the Department of Treasury, and it consists of various high-level government officials. I don't recall exactly which ones they are, but they review incoming investments and incoming money from foreign governments into strategic and sensitive U.S. industries to ensure that the national interest is being protected. So this is a separate topic entirely from the question of outright banning something. CFIUS is a body that, over the past 3 to 4 years, since the Trump administration, has opened a huge number of reviews into Chinese technological operations, business operations. It has banned, or it has put severe limitations on various forms of semiconductor parts, semiconductors themselves, surveillance equipment. A lot of Chinese surveillance equipment is sanctioned and not allowed in America. And that is completely understandable. That is different from the free market argument, because Chinese surveillance equipment, which is loaded up with Chinese chips and components and who knows what kind of software, is particularly prone to being used to spy on Americans, and worse, spy on American military capabilities or spy on government installations. That is a real threat. Now, in the case of TikTok, TikTok already has an enormous number of users. From the business standpoint, it has been enormously successful. It has done an excellent job of appealing to the Gen Z market, of getting the celebrities on board. Many people see it as the next generation of Facebook, or the company that's been overtaking Facebook and that will be the future of social media. So the solution there, you don't want to kill a business that's actually done a good job. You want to curtail a business in ways that will protect regular Americans. And the solution there, instead of banning it outright, is simply to require, force a sale to an American company. It's probably going to be Oracle, but doing something like that will keep TikTok working here. It's just that it is completely severed from any kind of Chinese Communist Party tie.
You know, it's interesting. India actually just outright banned TikTok itself a few years ago. Are there any lessons you would take from that experience?
Yes, I remember when that happened. I was actually in China when that ban happened. It was in response to a number of Chinese incursions along the Himalayan border, the northern border with India. There were a few scuffles and skirmishes that broke out. There was even at least one major fist fight that broke out between battalions of Chinese and Indian soldiers, and a few guys were thrown, off a cliff. I mean, there have been deaths in these areas. It is getting hostile in that region. So the thing about the Indian ban, I do still consider it to be overstepping from the liberal free market standpoint. But China is a much greater threat and a more direct threat to India than it is to the United States. Ultimately, we are separated by oceans. The most direct threat would be an invasion of Taiwan, which is a major U.S. ally. We would probably go and defend Taiwan from a military incursion by China, as President Biden has stated. But when you're India and, you know, you're right there on the border, and there have been many clashes, and there's a history of hostility between India and China, then yes, it's understandable why the Indian government will want to take as many steps as it possibly can to completely ban, you know, any kind of app or any kind of software that might have connections to the Chinese Communist Party.
You know, it's interesting, given what you're saying, you're helping me realize part of the answer to the, are we becoming too much like China by having this conversation? To your point, because I want to make this very clear for folks, if we were like China, President Trump, who started the ban conversation, could wake up and declare it's over, it's banned. Oracle, you're now acquiring it. No, Microsoft, you're actually acquiring it. There wouldn't be any legal review. There wouldn't be a Supreme Court that could intervene. Like, there, it's entirely plausible that there's a world where the Trump administration could have forced a sale of TikTok successfully and the courts could have struck it down, because they would actually have to use legal justification for all these different types of moves. So the key thing that you're really saying here that folks should take away is, anytime we have this discussion, to remain American and remain within our values, this has to operate within the rule of laws and different sets that we have here. And if it turns out that you think that this should happen, there should be some sort of forced acquisition, spin out, ban, et cetera, and the legal justification isn't there, then there should actually just be a new law passed, which is how the system actually works. So really delineating between those two points is the key thing here, because I don't want folks to think that, China thinks about its national security. We should think about our national security too. Like, us thinking about how the connection of capitalism, commerce, technology, how that fits into our national interests, that's just behaving as a nation state behaves. That's not the weird thing. The weird thing would be us going around the underlying systems there. So a question that I want to ask broadly before we get into the specifics of your claims against TikTok and how it constitutes a threat. We hinted at this earlier, but key story since the 2000s is the Chinese have not been reciprocal when it has come to U.S. technology companies entering into the Chinese market. And in fact, U.S. technology companies have been desperate to make it into the market. There's the famous anecdote of Mark Zuckerberg, who has now pivoted very anti-China and to, you know, very anti-TikTok when it comes to the Reels, Instagram, Instagram's Reels, TikTok competitor. So it's not as if he's always been consistent on this from a principal perspective, but he told Xi Jinping that he was going to give his, name his child after him, possibly. He studied Chinese. He recommended that people read Xi Jinping thought. But Facebook was never actually let in. Google isn't let in. Yahoo had a lot of controversy. What should our response be to this dynamic, to the fact there is not an open market when it comes to these situations?
You are right. So you have pointed out how American companies have gone out of the way to bend over backwards to, you know, kiss, I won't say the word, but, you know, kiss it to Chinese, to Chinese companies, to kiss it to Xi Jinping, and just show how much they love, they love China, and, you know, we love Chinese civilization, and we just want to name our kids and get tattoos with Chinese characters and so forth. I just find it hilarious. I chuckle often, especially reading the things that they put out in Chinese. There's a whole universe out there of Mandarin Chinese materials on the internet that don't get translated very often. And, you know, you'll see, like, I saw one a few years ago of Tim Cook at a factory that had allegedly used, not the same factory, but the same company was allegedly using slave labor, forced Uyghur labor to make components for various electronics companies. And there was this funny, news report in Chinese that showed him talking about, like, how Xi Jinping is awesome and I love the Chinese government and I'm here to help you and work with you. I don't know if he actually said that. I mean, it's quite possible that the Chinese state media embellished it or made it up. But, you know, it just shows how deep these companies are willing to go to try to please the Chinese government. So what do we do about this problem of, you know, the market mismatch? Nobody's really welcome in China. Big American companies are not welcome in China. It is a tough question, because here's the problem. Once we start censoring Chinese, say, a search engine like Baidu, or, you know, censoring Chinese platforms and content that, you know, content or apps that you can download. Like, at what point does normal quid pro quo protectionism cross into outright government censorship? You know, you could make a case on First Amendment or free speech grounds that we should not ban Chinese platforms or Chinese search engines, because there are a lot of Chinese speakers in America who want to access that. And, you know, sometimes they need to access it. It's not just a matter of propaganda, government propaganda, and then, you know, them like getting a load of propaganda. They actually do need to access Chinese language materials through those search engines. I don't know exactly what the solution to that particular problem is. I think that the only thing we can do is keep our information channels open. You know, I am a proponent of allowing Baidu to, you know, to be available in America. Baidu is the Google of China, and allowing people to access whatever information they want. I mean, you know, I come from a background in journalism. I often would read North Korean state media, propaganda media. I would read the, you know, Putin propaganda media. Like, if these services were banned in America, it would be preposterous for the work that I do, because I actually need to see what these governments are saying in their propaganda. It shows you how they think. It shows you, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. That said, you know, so there is a line to be drawn here, and I think that the proper line to draw is to draw it where freedom of speech ends. So a Chinese semiconductor, a Chinese surveillance camera, that is not protected by freedom of speech. That is a piece of hardware with major national security implications, and the US is right under national security grounds to ban those products. You can't even make a strong business case that they should be operating in America. Well, first of all, they are partially owned state companies that are heavily subsidized and helped by the Chinese government. So it's not a free market. It's one side rigging the free market to export products to Americans and to other countries. And then the other problem is, well, you know, wait a second. You know, like, even if these products could compete with American technology, the quality is just not that good for a lot of them. I mean, you know, Chinese products, they have improved vastly over the past few decades. It used to be that made in China was kind of the joke, and the, you know, you get a made in China product and it would break within a few days. They are a lot better than that. You can get, you know, a decent Huawei smartphone actually does work quite well. It's not an iPhone, but it's certainly usable. But, you know, I've used a lot of these products over the years, and they still are not, like, even remotely good enough to compete on the American market to begin with. So these are just a few of these different aspects of the debate going on right now. There's the national security aspect. There's the business market liberalism aspect. You know, there are different sides of this debate. And, you know, all I'm saying is that, you know, even if we were to not have major national security clauses in the way that we execute American law, I don't think that Chinese companies would be able to seriously compete with American ones regardless.
You know, my takeaway from what you just articulated here is that the whole tech reciprocity discussion awkwardly falls into the horses out of the barn bit, or horses out of the barn dynamic, where if it's 2006 or 2007 or 2008 and the Chinese government is saying that Google can't enter, or Facebook can't enter, or Yahoo is going to get hassled unless it creates severe restrictions that affect its ability to conduct free speech, it's one thing for us as the Chinese are building their own consumer internet field and space to say, okay, if you won't let us in, we won't let you in either. And that will severely affect your market share and ability to compete. The awkward reality is, given just the explosion of mobile, all these different Chinese apps exist within the home market. No one's using WeChat to buy groceries or call like Uber equivalents the way they are in China here in the United States. So the reciprocity argument is kind of beyond the point in that it wouldn't actually accomplish that much. Even if we were to say, well, look, if you won't let Google into China, then we're going to ban TikTok. The Chinese wouldn't then say, okay, that's a good point. We're going to let Google in. I think that would have been a much different conversation back in 2008. So it's important if we're having this discussion to be forward facing and address the actual problems and challenges that are in front of us rather than, and this is how, you know, China discussions tend to go, rehashing various mistakes folks made during the 2000s. We could have a debate about whether or not the call to let the Chinese into the WTO in 2000 was a correct one, but we're not kicking them out. So it wouldn't be great for you and I to have a podcast episode talking about how dumb everyone was in 1999. So a couple last segments here. So would love just to get a TikTok specific picture of the threats you outlined at the very start of the episode. So one, you referenced the children, families, democracy, national security, just really lay down for folks like the specific threats that anyone, whether they're pro TikTok, anti TikTok, spinoff, status quo, or ban, what are the specific threats that everyone, regardless of side, has to confront moving forward?
The biggest specific threat is the Chinese government's artificial intelligence ambitions. The president of China, Xi Jinping, has made clear that AI is a national pillar of Chinese state society, of military operations moving forward, that they're going to try to become a leader in AI in the coming years. I think the year was 2025, don't recall exactly which year it was. TikTok will potentially become a major arm of this, assuming it is coming under Chinese government pressure, because TikTok is a trove of facial data, voice data, of potentially predictive analytics that could be used to attempt to predict the behavior of Americans or predict the behavior of military officials, maybe track the way, where do they drive every day? How do they kind of behave? How do they operate? The biggest problem here is that this is a massive, massive goldmine of data from people all over the world, many of them in positions of power and influence that the Chinese government, could use against them. This is where we stand now. So if you're using TikTok, I'm sure there are listeners who use TikTok themselves or have kids who use TikTok. You should start on the assumption that TikTok is sharing your data with the Chinese Communist Party. And you should start on that assumption because even in TikTok's own privacy guidelines, its privacy agreement says that TikTok is allowed to share data, quote, within our corporate group. So what does that mean? Within our corporate group, they've never actually clarified, to my knowledge, what that means. But the corporate group of TikTok, so it's owned by ByteDance, which is in the Cayman Islands, a shell company. ByteDance owns the Chinese company, another company called ByteDance. There is a person in a subsidiary of the Chinese ByteDance who is a Communist Party official who sits on the board of one of their big subsidiaries. That right there, I just laid out an indirect loop that goes straight from America to the Communist Party. Somebody, maybe a Chinese executive for TikTok in China hands off data to that subsidiary, which is a ByteDance subsidiary, which hands it off to that one board member, who oversees company operations, who hands it off to a member of the Politburo, a Chinese general. Like, you never know. Like, these networks are not as diluted as it seems. China does have more than a billion people. It's a big country, but among party elites, among business and political elites, all these guys are in the same clique. They're in bed together. They're all, talking and exchanging information. This is not the kind of system where a separation of powers will actually protect your data. So if you're using TikTok, remember, China might be watching. China is not nice. China is not looking out for your best interests. And China is a hostile power to America. So whatever data you put on there could be used against you. That is not paranoid, but that is how the Chinese Communist Party operates.
One of the scariest data privacy, I can't even say violations because this isn't illegal, but what feels like a violation in terms of your privacy would be the logging of keystrokes, which happens on the, you know, when someone's, you know, installed TikTok on their phone. So this would be my notes section, other different bits of the iPhone. Why isn't that just illegal in general? Because I just noticed that when it comes to articulating this issue to folks, the keystrokes combined with the national security lack of oversight concern is one that really resonates with folks. And to your earlier point in the episode, I don't want to create a false equivalence between US tech companies who do lame slash uncomfortable things and TikTok, because once again, there's no possible conflict over Taiwan with Mark Zuckerberg. So that really should change the dynamic there. But like that being said, I think if folks are uncomfortable with TikTok logging notes, one could also be uncomfortable with Facebook logging notes. So why can't we just pass broad privacy protections that would circumvent the complicated national security dynamics here?
We should be concerned about Facebook logging our keystrokes, you are correct. And even if we do pass laws to do this, I do agree that we should have laws against this. It should be illegal. But the problem now with TikTok, it goes back to what I said earlier, which is that TikTok does not entirely report to the US jurisdiction. TikTok executives are prone to Chinese pressure under Chinese law. So what this will happen, you know, there's a mechanism.
Quick interruption slash question to clarify then. But there still are privacy laws in this country. So for example, California has, at a state level, has very, very aggressive privacy laws. TikTok has to abide by those under the status quo, correct?
It does. You are correct. TikTok does have to abide by those laws, but the Chinese government has also passed legislation that puts companies in a bind because they will be required sometimes to choose between whether they want to cooperate with American law or with Chinese law, which contradict in many ways. Because like I said earlier, China and America are two countries with vastly different systems. And if China wants to get access to your data, it will bulldoze its way in and find a way to get access to that data through ByteDance and TikTok in China. So there is a Chinese, so under Chinese legislation, there is Chinese legislation, there is a Chinese law that under China's Ministry of Commerce will penalize companies around the world. You don't have to be a Chinese company, but say a company's operating in China and operating in the US. If a company complies with an American, a sanction order or an export control or any number of various levers that the American government can use to stop data and technology from flowing back to China, then the Chinese government can penalize them and harass those companies in China, issuing major fines if they follow American law. So a situation could arise there. This is a completely plausible scenario. Let's say TikTok is following California's strict privacy laws. TikTok America gets a request through its ByteDance parent company in the Cayman Islands. They get an order from the Chinese Communist Party. You have to send data on these Hong Kong dissidents now living in California. Let's say TikTok America, their lawyers write back and say no, because under California law, we can't do that. The Chinese government can arrest and detain the TikTok executives currently in China. They can say, well, you know, you've broken the law. These executives in China are the ones we're holding accountable because they refuse to hand over data. So they're under arrest. We're holding them, or it could be detention without criminal charge, which is possible in China. And it could be something, you know, there are some Chinese laws that stipulate this could be as long as 20 days in detention. They'll just be put in handcuffs, held in a guest house somewhere, and just harassed to no end until TikTok finally complies and says, okay, you know, we'll hand over this data in secret, but through, you know, perhaps through another venue to try to get around California law, so we're not held accountable in California too.
So for the last section, I just want to make a quick editorial point before I ask you about the farm purchasing issue. Folks who are in the news will know what I'm referring to. I just really want to say my main reaction here is that there are so many specifics that we've gotten into But it seems like at a core level, there is a massive vulnerability given the nature of what TikTok is, which is a massive communications platform, and the possibility of conflict. This doesn't mean you have to say to yourself, oh, the US should back Taiwan, or oh, the US needs to do X, Y, and Z thing, or oh, well, let's look at it from the Chinese perspective. It's as simple as there is a massive telecommunications vulnerability, one which did not exist during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, given the possibility of conflict due to the nature of our different economies. You didn't have globalization tying things together, but that's just a massive vulnerability. And even folks who don't support a spinoff, a ban, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I recognize this is complicated. They need to address the specific dynamic. And this episode for me really just started with too many folks in the tech press who will, let's say, Jeff, maybe quibble with the way that you articulated the specific privacy concerns within TikTok. I could easily see a libertarian or center left tech journalist saying, oh, actually, Jeff, it turns out that the privacy thing isn't this, this, or that. And it actually turns out that the Keystoke tracking, it's not what people think it is. It's actually much, much more straightforward. It's one thing to look at those specifics, and those are valuable to really factor in. But unless you discuss those specifics within the context of great power rivalry and a possible conflict, given the fact that President Biden literally just said it for the sixth time, we would defend Taiwan in case of an invasion. You cannot look at those at a separate level, and the tech press needs to do a much better job at doing that. Rant over, final question here, kind of related but unrelated topic. You, along with our colleagues Lars, had a really interesting op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about Chinese purchases of farmland. And the reason why I was interested in this story is this is kind of one of those things which has been popping up in social media lately. But let's just say people who've been sharing this story are the same people who are sharing like the World Economic Forum is like microchips and all those different weird things. So it's one of those issues which sounds kind of conspiracy valence having. Chinese government entities are buying farmland, but you're writing this in the Wall Street Journal. I trust your credibility. What's going on here? How would you summarize this issue?
Chinese government connected entities, Chinese government connected companies are buying up vast acres of land throughout America, farmland in particular. Now, there is a real reason for this. It's not all about the spying and the geopolitical rivalry. One of the reasons is that China is extremely vulnerable when it comes to its food supplies. China does not have enough of a food stock to feed all of its people. This is 1.2 billion people we're talking about, in a country that just simply doesn't have, you know, doesn't grow enough food, doesn't produce enough food. So over the past 10 years, the Bank of China, which is the central bank, the state bank of China, has loaned billions of dollars in some cases to allow Chinese companies to come to America and to either buy up vast tracts of land or to buy major American agricultural companies, one of the biggest ones being a major pork producer. So the Chinese government since 2013 has controlled much of America's pork supply. Their spokesman, you know, responds saying that they sell most of that in China, that they sell most of that in America. But the problem here is that China is trying to find ways to secure its food supply in case there is a future conflict, future instability. You know, the Russia-Ukraine war has devastated some grain supplies, which are now in flux with the prices. There's a lot going on here behind the scenes geopolitically that is cause for worry. Now, that is not the whole story, of course. Part of the story is that a few major Chinese conglomerates have been found to be buying up vast acres of land right nearby U.S. military bases. In one case, a major installation that is being used to form the backbone of military communications around the world. So this is in North Dakota. There's a group called the Fufing Group, which is a milling company. They're trying to set up a milling plant in North Dakota. Okay, so milling plant, that sounds, you know, sounds harmless, right? Okay, so why is it a 20 minute drive from a major Air Force base that is running a satellite mission that is going to form our military communications around the world? One of the big problems with US-China relations, I think that we Americans can be quite naive when we're dealing with hostile foreign powers, because we're accustomed to having things like the Fifth Amendment or the Fourth Amendment. No unreasonable search and seizure. The police will not be allowed to, search those installations that China is setting up the milling plants because there's no evidence that a crime is being committed. So China and other countries, Russia, authoritarian countries, they take advantage of our liberties, our liberalism, to create a mask for their espionage activities in America. This is something that had existed in the Cold War too. Many Soviet spies have been found out, and they used America's Constitution against America to try to, create this cloak of, nothing wrong is happening here. And this is the concern now with farmland, that there are at least two major Chinese companies that are building very suspicious installations right nearby military bases that don't really make much sense because there's not really a clear market demand that I've been able to find for what they're building. Who knows? We don't know for sure the real reason, but what we do know is under Chinese law, going back to what I said earlier, those companies will be required to spy on American military installations if the Communist Party requests it. And if it has not requested that already.
So, what's the proposed solution from folks who are critiquing the status quo with the farmland?
There is a law in place called AFIDA, which is an agricultural law dating back to the 1970s. It does require the Department of Agriculture to register these vast foreign buy-ups and to put them into a database, but the Department of Agriculture admits that the data is flawed. They made a lot of mistakes. And it's not complete. I mean, there are cases where a lot of foreign companies, it turns out, have not done the required filings to show that they're buying this up. But the system is in such disarray that we simply have no idea exactly how much land China owns in America. We do know from the data that we have that the amount of Chinese farmland in America has risen by 20 times since 2010. What kind of country suddenly, buys 20 times more farmland than another country over the period of a decade? That's a surprisingly short time, and we don't see that with any other countries. I mean, most foreign farmland has risen about 2 to 3% during that same period. So there's clearly a Chinese government strategy at work here. They have not publicly articulated it, but they do speak through the money that they give to Chinese companies to buy up this farmland. I mean, could you imagine an American company getting a $4 billion loan from the US government or the Fed, for example, to buy a major Chinese company and to, produce, buy it right near a military installation, and we claim that we're just farming there. Like, imagine how that would go over in China, and imagine the vast pushback. I mean, that American company would instantly be blocked and kicked out. It would not be a question in China at all. But yet, we allow China to do this here.
I think that's a excellent place to leave it. Once again, there's a couple of big themes here. One, like reciprocity. What does a fair, balanced relationship looks like? How do you adjudicate these big questions while also retaining, like you said, our small L liberalism? Obviously, we're referring to like the political philosophy of liberalism, not like left, right, center, Democratic Party politics. And then also, like, what are the specific concerns that folks have going forward, and how does a potential conflict exacerbate them? Jeff, this has always been great. I'm sure we'll have you back again soon, given the nature of the topics you study. Thank you for joining us again on the Realignment.
Thank you, Marshall.